We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
6:15 and a half. It is Tuesday, June 8th. It's hard to believe we're that far into June, really, if you think about it. We're almost to the middle of June. Anyway, we are definitely into our summertime routine as it relates to weather. Highs between 88 and 90, and then a chance for afternoon showers, and it could get hotter than that depending on where and for how long it rains and how much it rains. Peter Scharf joins us now. A friend who is with us every Tuesday morning, Peter, an adjunct professor and criminologist at LSU Health New Orleans School of Public Health. Good morning, Peter. How are you?
Good morning. This has been quite a week.
It has. I know you've referred to this in an email you sent me about maybe the weekend, the wheels came off in terms of what happened in New Orleans East. Explain that, if you will, Peter.
Well, we had 11 people shot in 13 hours. But that builds on, and I the Metropolitan Crime Commission, Rafael Goynich and Molly, sent me the stats. And it's kind of like you go to the doctor and you have a blood pressure of 240 over 180 and an A1C of 15. I mean, it's not good. So every indicator is up. And another person died last night. We have 92 murders, which probably projects to well over 200 for the year. A year and a half ago, in 2019, we had 120 murders. So the murder totals with the population constant has almost doubled. That's not good. And then you have the shooting on the I-10, a mass shooting that I think still is basically unsolved. So where are we going? You know, so I think the wheels coming off is not all that inappropriate.
I was watching an interview with the guy that owned the business where that shooting happened, and he chose to open that business in New Orleans East. He had his kids out there, which is just hard to believe that you would have your children in that environment. It was a teen party. He said he wanted to put the business in New Orleans East because there was nothing there for teenagers. Now he doesn't know what's going to happen in terms of the business. He's got capital involved in this as well as human capital with his kids. Is there something about the East, Peter, that lends itself to this kind of thing? Because I whether right or wrong, I guarantee you, if you ask somebody in New Orleans to mention something they associate with New Orleans East, it's going to be crime. That may be fair, it may be not fair, but it is a reality. So is there something about the East that lends itself to more crime, and do the stats bear that out?
Well, New Orleans East was devastated during Katrina. You know, cars turned on their backs. Business was destroyed. At one time, it was a vibrant part of New Orleans, and now it's become the broken part of the city. And whether it breeds crime or crime migrates there because it's a very large area, difficult to supervise from a police point of view. If you drive up Chef Mentura, for example, you're in no man's land for a long period of time. Very difficult to patrol or control. And, so that's become the hot point for the city. But there are other parts of the city that are unsafe as well. One of the things about Sunday morning was there was a shooting on Porgers, right near one of the top hotels in New Orleans, and a couple on one on Conti and one on Canal. So we've become an equal opportunity city for violence. And again, the commercial impact of a shooting in, you know, in front of the, you know, the most prestigious hotels in the city, the economic impact is great. You know, you what I said in my interviews was, you know, the tourists stop coming because they don't want to be shot, or in other factors. And you're going to lose your tax base. You're not going to be able to afford more police officers, which you desperately need. You're not going to afford the EMTs or anything else. So there's a spillover factor that's profound.
All right, quick break. When we come back, what has the city done last week to control gun violence? And have any of these measures been effective? And let's project ahead. Do you see any difference happening? Peter Scharf is our guest, adjunct professor, criminologist at LSU Health New Orleans School of Public Health. The numbers bear it out. Homicides up 36%, shootings up 81% versus last year. Carjackings up 113%. Right now it's time for traffic on WWL. 625, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Peter Scharf as we do every Tuesday morning. Adjunct professor, criminologist at LSU Health New Orleans School of Public Health, about crime in the city. And Peter's saying maybe this weekend, if you look at what happened out in New Orleans East with that shooting there, maybe it's the weekend the wheels came off. Peter, what has the city done the last couple of weeks to control gun violence, and how effective have they been?
Well, one thing is, in the proposal stage, it came from the city council, my friend Helena Moreno, and what they're trying to do is have civilian response to disputes, have a new team. So instead of police handling disputes, they'll use crisis mediation techniques to train the civilians. And my reaction is that Tom Permian interviewed me about that initiative, and I think it's a feasibility issue. You know, given what's going on and how stretched resources are, can it be effective? Yeah, you know, the training ante is enormous. I've done the research on these initiatives, and there's what's called the Memphis model, which is a very effective crisis intervention model. But there are all kinds of problems. Like, if civilians respond, who's going to clear the scene for guns? Even after you've tried anything, if an arrest is necessary, what happens? If the situation escalates, you know, who responds? So they're just all connected. Not that this is a bad idea. I actually think it's a good idea to train people in this technique. But the feasibility issues are there. One of the scary things that happened a few days ago was the carjacking, where the poor person had to witness where the young boy was injured. His foot was crushed by the car as they were trying to get, the woman was trying to get away. It took 3 hours for police to get there. So we're in a city where we have astronomic murder risks, shooting risks, and the police are so stretched. You know, the response times are going up, not down. So, you know, that's, and also, will that affect gun violence? It may affect the way we handle calls, but will it really reduce the murder risk? Probably not. The other problematic area is the state police. They're coming in tarnished by the death of Ronald Green, which they didn't report right away and didn't report it objectively. So, there are issues of racial bias being alleged, and they're coming as help. How will it merge with NLPD? How do the cultures of the state police and NLPD, how can this will be a challenge for Sean Ferguson and Paul Noel and John Thomas and everybody else? They're two radically different cultures, police cultures. How do we get them together? So
Peter,
that's what's on the table.
I'm sorry. When we come back, because we got to take a break for news here, I would like you to walk me through what Councilperson Moreno is proposing. Because when you talk about civilian response to disputes, first of all, do we even know what happened on Sunday night? Was that personal beef? Was it a business deal in terms of drugs? Who knows what was happening with that? And secondly, I don't know how, in terms of an intervention, be it mental health, be it, as you said, a civilian response to disputes, I don't know how you would do that. How in the world would somebody intervene if a bad actor like the situation in New Orleans East this weekend decides to get a gun and go shoot up a party? I don't know how that act. I mean, it sounds great, right, to say that. It sounds great. Mental health. It sounds great to say have crisis intervention people. But how do you actually stop somebody or intervene? How do you even have a chance to do that if somebody's going to get a gun and they don't care, and for whatever reason, they're going to go shoot up a party full of teenagers? It sounds great. It really does. But I just don't know practically, on the ground, how that would work. Take me from, when we come back, take me from this beef that's going on in New Orleans East. Let's say it is just a personal beef, and it's not a business deal over drugs. I don't know how in the world a civilian person could get involved in that and intervene to prevent this from leading to gunfire. It sounds great, again, but I just don't know how that could practically work. Right now, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Dave Cohen. 6:44, 16 before 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Dr. Peter Scharf, our friend, our guest, adjunct professor and criminologist at LSU Health New Orleans School of Public Health. And Peter, again, I'm not the guy in the meeting room or the girl or the man or woman that says, oh, well, that'll never work. That'll never work. But has no ideas of their own. I would just like to know, when it comes to a civilian response to diffusing situations before it turns into some kind of drive-by shooting, etc., how would that work? Because a lot of these things happen so quickly, right? I mean, is that really a viable thing? Does it happen in other cities?
That's a wonderful question, by the way. Look, we've had, in the past, models that had some effect but a lot of consequences. So the Guardian Angels in New York, the Nation of Islam in Chicago. I did some work in the Robert Taylor Homes, one of the worst projects in the country. And the housing cops would come there, and the Nation of Islam folks would take their guns away so they wouldn't get hurt. And they ran the projects. But that's a consequence. I don't know if we want to go there. The other thing is, we used to have gang workers. You know, one of the problems is we really don't understand these gang dynamics. We've lost the touch since we stopped doing intelligence of who's beefing with who. Unless you get there before it happens, you can't do anything, right? After the shooting is done, it's all over. So you got to one, you have to have enough trust that people surface it. Now, one of the design problems we have in the city right now, and this is, you know, the policy of the city, is that there are limits on sharing intelligence with the police. And the ceasefire people, the cure violence people, they're opposed to sharing the intelligence of the police. So let's say we knew which two groups are beefing in the east, right? One is who gets the information and how do they intervene? And that's where I agree with you. That's where it really gets sticky, and you need a lot of realistic thinking. The other thing, these gang workers I used to work with in Santa Ana, California, they were beyond tough. And one guy, he was a shoeshine boy in Newark before he tried doing this. And if a guy was getting shot while he was getting a shoeshine, he'd get the quarter out of his pocket so he'd get paid before the guy dropped. That's how tough he was. Jim Fagan was his name. So you need a different kind of cat to do this kind of work. But again, as you're saying, unless you think it through, how are you going to get there? Now, the other thing is you can say, we're only going to take low-level disputes, right? The low-level disputes become high-level disputes. Look at George Floyd. That starts with a counterfeit bill, right? And look what happened. So these things escalate. And then if it escalates, what exactly happens? So, and Helena is very savvy, actually, tremendous. I've known her almost 25 years. And she is too,
Peter. I just wonder how it's going to work. That's all.
Oh, I know. They got really, and I'm sure she realizes it too. They've got to really think it through, or it could be a disaster. disaster in the 90s, they tried it here, and they had a bunch of, call it mediators, who got shot. So, you know, and then they stopped doing that. So, it takes a lot of thought, a lot of structure, and a lot of training. And then who is going to do the training, how they're going to do the training, what is the doctrine? So there's so many things, the devil's in the details. There's so many
and
things
to her credit,
need to think through.
In no way am I criticizing her, because somebody's got to do something, and ideas are ideas. I'm open to anything. I was just trying to kind of think it through.
The last thing is that there, you know, you look at the incident in North Carolina or the thing near Monroe, and they're sending the police to dispute kinds of calls, low-level calls, can have a negative effect. So I'm with you. I get why people want to do it. It's just, as you're saying, how do you do it? Unless you know exactly how and how you can protect these mediators, whatever you want to call them, it could make it worse.
So what about the surge, the numbers, you know, you sent me that I've been reading about? Homicide up 36%, carjacking up 113%, shootings up 81%. Is there a reason that you can put behind that surge, and is it about COVID or not? Because I can't imagine that the people that are doing the shooting were not shooting because they were masking up and following social distancing.
Well, you know, the great question again. A friend of yours and mine came and harassed me yesterday, argued with me all morning, you know, in the Vietnamese restaurant. And basically, one of the things I said in the WWL TV interview was, I'm over COVID as a cause. Really, even though I said that earlier, in the sense of, I think it's kind of a blanket cop-out excuse.
Gotcha.
And we've got to pin down as to the reasons. And, you know, as the epidemics progressed, and this made me very unpopular with my friend, very close friend, and yours too, you know, with, you know, that you got to look a little deeper. Like, did the drug trade become destabilized? The one thing that's well documented in the criminological research, you destabilize the drug trade and murder happens, violence happens. You know, it's a disaster. You get new runners, you have groups going to overlapping turfs, and you increase drug competition. And when increased competition among people who carry guns, bad things happen. And that's, so instead of saying, well, it's stress, now you think about it, and it's absurd. I'm under stress, so I do a drive-by on kids, you know, at an event. Or you look at the 12-year-old that got shot. So we've escalated our violence. We've gone from one-on-one either emotional illness, or you want to get the guy in the crowd, to shooting the whole crowd. Now, and that's where I really started fearing for the city. So if this has become a pattern, the new normal, we're really in some trouble. So now, and we had incidents of civilians being shot, or innocent people being shot, the Mother's Day massacre. Remember that in 2013? So they shoot through the crowd, shoot a bunch of the crowd. So I know one guy's still in the hospital. So they were still ill, you know, recovering, never recovered. So how do we deal with that?
Peter, we got to take a break. When we come back, I want to ask you quickly, in terms of stabilization of drug structure, whatever it is, Louisiana legislature has sent a bill to the governor's desk that would eliminate the possibility of jail time for possession of small amounts of marijuana. Is that going to have any effect on any of this? We'll talk when we come back. 6:52, 8 before 7. That's time for traffic now on WWL. 6:56, almost 6:57, Tommy Tucker, WWL, Tuesday, June 8th. Thank you for getting your day started with us here. Peter Scharf, thank him for spending an hour with us, as he always does every Tuesday morning. He's an adjunct professor, criminologist at LSU Health New Orleans School of Public Health, talking about violent crime. And Peter, every week it seems as though we have more and more to talk about, unfortunately. I want to ask you about this decriminalization of marijuana bill that's headed to the governor's desk. Do you see, as a criminologist, that in any way this will have an effect in any way on violent crime?
Not really. I think there's another thing I think Helena is doing, and this bill is de-obligating the police. Right now, their management span is they're handling everything from husband-wife dispute to a roach, in somebody's pocket. You know, and in some ways, we're so stretched. They're not getting any calls. One of the problems is if they handled it, and that's where Helena really has something, if they handle a complicated domestic violence case or a complicated dispute with a lot of paperwork, they're never going to get back on the road. So, and this is a scary dilemma for Sean Ferguson. The balance between dealing with these complicated issues, not that the marijuana is really a complicated issue, but or versus getting there at all. And right now we're so stretched we're not getting there at all. So I think that these initiatives, for a bunch of reasons, the other thing is we have people who are sitting for years in prison for a joint, right? Many college students have a joint every day. They don't leave home without it, right? So, we're going, it's a culture thing going on, an ethics thing going on, and also logistics and police efficiency thing going on, and they're all moving in the same direction, and I think that will free up resources in the long run and not do a whole lot of harm.
You talked about the wheels coming off last weekend. Do you think next Tuesday when we talk that we will be talking about another drive-by, another big shooting where a lot of people were injured or killed even?
Well, two cops called me that day, and I was on both Fox and WWL, as you know, so I was busy, and your station. And they said, if you shoot eight people, then there are eight people who are going to be mad that they got shot. And, that's street law, a street comment, but there's some truth in it.
That is an excellent point because it expands exponentially. Not only do you have eight people that are angry, but you have the friends and family of those eight people that are angry, and you could see, like a playoff bracket, how quickly that expands. Thank you, Peter.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.